Hello and welcome to the Leadership Connection. I'm your host, Doug Tucknet, and today I'm sitting down with reliability leader David Hurst. I met David a number of years ago, and I'll let him get into what his job is, where he works, and what his role is here in a moment. But worked with his team a few years back to do some RCMs on some pretty unique equipment. Welcome, David. It's good to talk to you today.
Doug, it's good to talk to you as well. It's been a while. Too long.
Yeah. So if you could tell our audience a bit about your background and where you work and the role that you serve there.
I am at Arnold Engineering Development Complex, and it's an Air Force base, and it's rather unique in that we don't have any active planes. We operate over 50 test facilities for the Air Force. I'm with the primary test and operations and maintenance contractor, National Aerospace Solutions. I've been here at ADC for almost 38 years. Started developing data and control systems and putting them in and operating them and maintaining them. And through my career, moved from those into maintenance in the plants. And currently I am the branch manager for the Asset Health Assurance Branch. And our assignment is to basically overhaul the preventive maintenance program for ADC. We've got over 20,000 level one assets that we maintain, ranging from, you know, your small everyday motors up to 83,000 horsepower motors. We've got raw water pumps for our cooling water that pump up to 50,000 gallons per minute. We've got basically the electrical distribution of a small city. And so we've got a lot of unique assets that we use, and keeping them running is pretty challenging.
Very good. So tell me, David, when were you first recognized as a leader? What were you working on, and what project were you working on? What brought about that recognition for you, do you think?
It was probably, Doug, when I moved from the controls and instrumentation side. We started a big push on continuous improvement. When our budget started getting cut, we needed to start figuring out ways to reduce our cost on our maintenance. And I was one of half a dozen to a dozen folks that were asked to go through some continuous improvement training so we could look at our maintenance program, we could look at our operations. And so I moved from an engineering type position into a leadership type role. The first couple of projects we did were very successful, and of course, then they got a lot of attention and with upper management, and it kind of moved from there.
All right. So, in your career, is there one or two people that you considered a mentor, and what did you learn from those people?
I have had the great fortune of I spent 20 plus years with Ramesh Gulati. And he was kind of the voice in the wilderness for a lot of years at ADC when it came to maintenance and reliability. But he stayed with it, and a lot of our success and a lot of my success I can contribute to Ramesh, to his support, to the training that he's done, and the emphasis. He worked really hard to get upper management as well as the Air Force to understand the importance of reliability and maintenance. And, you know, Ramesh and I still meet for lunch regularly and talk regularly. And he's not only a mentor, but he's a really good friend.
He's a very good guy. I've known Ramesh for years, and we love occasionally to pick on one another. He's got a great sense of humor, and I could see where he would be one heck of a mentor. I mean, I can't even think of how many books he's got out. I know of at least two.
We're probably on three or four. He was working on another one the last time I talked to him. Of course, he's spending most of his time going around training down at Mississippi State University in Canton at the Nissan plant up at the University of Wisconsin for the company he's with right now.
All right. Very good. Thank you. What are some of the things that motivated you to become a leader?
Well, I've always liked working with people. You know, just coming through school when we were put in groups, I typically ended up in a leadership type position. I love going out and talking about what my group is doing to make sure they get the right appreciation for what they've done, or people acknowledge and understand how hard we work with our predictive maintenance program and working on the PM's program. And I get great satisfaction from seeing my folks succeed. And, you know, that's what motivates me to come to work. It's just the work that we're doing. And I believe, and Doug, you've seen this, is that we could impact the maintenance program at ADC for a decade or more if we do this right. And that's the challenge that we face every day when I come to work.
All right. So looking back at your career, what are some of the accomplishments that you've made that you're most proud of?
The first continuous improvement Six Sigma type effort I did, we had an old Navy captain, commander, I guess Bert was a commander, who was our director at that time. And my job was to reduce the lost test time for a set of valves. And it was pretty significant. You know, the size of the test cells and things like here, lost test time is precious because that's burning money. And every morning I'd look at the morning report and Bert would call me and say, David, did you see the lost test time report? And I'd say, yes, sir. He said, fix it. And so we went through this pretty exhaustive analysis of the hydraulically controlled valves out there. And they were running, this group of 12 valves was running on the order of 40 hours of lost test time attributed to them a year. And when you look at a year, that's not a lot. But when you look at it in terms of money, if you're thinking $1,000 a minute to test, it adds up really quick. And after we went through all our analysis and implemented the changes to the maintenance program and the way we operate the valves and things like that, for the next 4 years, there was zero lost test time attributed to those valves.
Wow, and that's impressive.
That gave us a lot of credibility, you know, and I had a really good team. And Doug, because I don't want you to think I did that by myself. I've got some folks that have been with me since day one, since my first management job on this that I've worked with out here. And they did a lot of hard work. And I was the one that had the privilege of presenting that. And it was pretty significant. And, of course, that bought us a lot of credibility, not only with the Air Force, but with our customers in the plants, you know, when they saw the changes that we had made.
Well, from experience, I do know you have quite a team there, ones that certainly challenge everything that's put in front of them. I remember going through the RCM and just some of the steps of that process. You know, sometimes it wouldn't be direct face-to-face. It'd be, you know, they on a break time out in the hall might say, hey, why are we doing this step? And, you know, why is it important? Can you help clarify that for me? I mean, people like that, when you work with folks that just don't let the status quo click on by, there's a lot of good things you can accomplish. And I have to say that I felt pretty special to be working with your group. That's for sure.
The first thing I tell them, I don't care whether they're right out of college or they got experience, is their number one job is to keep me from doing something stupid. You know, if I start driving us down a bad path, I expect them to speak up and say, do we really want to do that? Or ask the questions that you were talking, because we've hired them for their mind. If all they were going to do is come to me and say, what do? I don't need them. I want them to think. I want them to take different approaches, to think outside the box and keep me out of trouble, you know, and keep us pointed in the right direction.
All right. So speaking of hiring people, and not just the young ones, for sure, you've been in a position where you are hiring people and you do promote people. What are some of the traits that you look for when you're looking for leaders, and why are those traits important?
Well, you know, communication is right at the top. You know, I want somebody that can not necessarily stand up in front of 100 people and present, but be in a small group and keep the group focused and pointed in the right direction and not lose sight of the goal. And so they, in order to do that, they have to be technically competent. They have to understand the process that we're doing. They have to understand the results that we're trying to get, but then they have to be able to communicate to the system engineers and to the government and to the planners and schedulers why we're trying to do this. ours, what we're doing, we can't do in a vacuum, because we're going in and we're trying to help people basically mess with their equipment, mess with their maintenance program, tweak it, change it, totally overhaul it, whatever we need. But they've got to have the buy-in and they've got to understand it. So my reliability engineers that are the face of our organization to the different mission areas out here have to be able to communicate that, and they have to be able to get the buy-in from the system engineers, or this thing will never work. So,
right.
You know, communication and the technical skills are the two right at the top of the list.
Okay. So nearly every leader I've ever met or talked to will at some point or another talk about a book or a course they've taken that influenced their career in some way. Could you tell us about a book or course that made a change in your career, and what were some of the things that you took away from that book or that course?
Well, of course, Ramesh being here, and he would talk stuff which was gibberish until I actually went through the life cycle engineering's class over in Charleston, South Carolina. Three of us went through a year's worth, where once a quarter we would go spend a week in their maintenance leadership class. And I learned a lot of the basics and the metrics that they taught in that class. It started making sense to me. We had some really good instructors. Bruce Hawkins and Ricky Smith were two that come to mind immediately, and was fortunate to have them when we were over there and going through that. And of course, then they prepared us, and the whole thing with SMRP, it became a big push at ADC to get your CMRP. We wanted our system engineers to all have that foundational knowledge of maintenance and reliability. So Ramesh and I would start training the system engineers. I became branch manager of all the system engineers at ADC for a while. And so we pushed them hard to learn and understand why are we doing what we're doing and what's the impact, the lead and lagging indicators and all the maintenance stuff that goes on. And I think that's when ADC turned the corner.
All right. So if you were forced to pick one way or the other, do you think leadership is a natural skill or a learned skill?
I think there is a huge aspect of a natural skill to it, you know, and that's something I try to look for in my people. Kim, let me get a drink of water.
All right, so we'll stop and we'll do that question over again.
Apologize.
No problem.
Middle Tennessee sinus.
I'd be lying if I say I haven't been there.
Okay, I think I'm ready now.
All right, let's go. So, David, tell me, if you were forced to pick one way or the other, is leadership a natural skill or a learned skill?
It's a mix, but I think you've got to have some natural leadership capability. One of the more interesting studies I did was a personality survey by Dr. Robert Rahm, and he looked at four different personality types, DISC, and as important as learning in your personality type, your strengths, which most of your leaders have the D type mixed in with something else, but you also learn the weaknesses. And when I had the system engineers, I wouldn't make them take that test, but what I would try to do would be to look at different traits and understand what did they like to do? Did they like to be in the field? Did other people like to do analysis? And instead of trying to spend time to improve their weaknesses, because if a guy doesn't like to do paperwork and I'm making him do paperwork all day, he's going to hate his job. I'm saying, okay, you have to do X amount of paperwork for your, just because it's part of your job. But I want you to spend time in the field with the craftsman, knowing your equipment and understanding it, so they would enjoy that part of the job. So you focus on their strengths and you try to minimize the impact of their weaknesses is the way I've always tried to approach it. But I, for leadership, I think you've got to have a certain natural skill when it comes to the communicating and just the people willing to follow you and trust you.
All right. That's an interesting take on that. In terms of those studies and stuff, I've participated in a few of those, and in some places they handle it in a mature way, like you did, where you say, I'm going to use this so that I can make sure that, you know, the job that this person does really fits their type of personality, and then there's other ones that seem to pigeonhole people in it, you know. And it's one of those things that it's a small tool to help you lead and manage, right? But at the same time, you've also got to get beyond the fact that the people do grow, they do mature, right? They do change sometimes, and that's where you know, I've had people argue, well, leadership's a learned skill. And I do, like you, I think I say it, it's a combination of those things, right? And you see it sometimes early on in kids that they're natural leaders, that they have a group of friends that follow them. Some could say, well, that's just charisma, right? But charisma might be an important part of leadership down the road, provided they can learn the things to say, all right, here's my boundaries in terms of leadership, of what I'm able to do and what I'm not able to do, right? And that they can make those connections.
Oh, absolutely. So, I have seen too many cases out here where just because a guy is really, really good technically, that we promote him to lead to management just because he's good technically, and he hates it, you know, and he likes the technical work, so leave him alone. We
exactly.
need to pass. You need the management path and the technical path.
Right. And I can tell you, having worked with hundreds of companies now, that there are still many, many, many companies making a mistake that when they go to make maintenance supervisors, they take the guy that's their best firefighter, right? And you go, really? Is that the behavior that you want to promote? And that's not to say that that person can't be a good supervisor, but if you're looking to get out of the firefighting mode, that might not be the right person, right?
Exactly. Absolutely.
Okay. So moving on, someone once told me in our world that you can either be a leader or a manager. What are your thoughts on that statement?
I absolutely agree with that. I mean, if you're a manager, your people follow you just because you're telling them what to do. If you're a leader, your people follow you because they respect you. They understand you've got their back, and there's a reason for what you do.
All right.
It's not a dictatorship.
Do you think it's possible to be both?
I think you have to be both at times. You know, my folks and over my career, Doug, is I always tried to be a leader, but ultimately there may come a point where I have to make a decision, and then it kind of moves to being the manager, saying, guys, we've got to do this, period. Don't question it. You know, sometimes you've got to get to that point.
Yeah.
But if you've done the other part right, if you're the leader, then they understand that there's good reason for what you're doing, that you've been directed by the Air Force or your upper management to do something like that.
Exactly. They look at it and they say, well, he was dictated that he had to do something, and I trust that he was fair in how he made that decision. Right.
Right.
That's the leadership piece of it. All right, very good. So at this point in your career, what would you say or list as your greatest success?
I assume you're talking about work, because outside of work, I just became a grandfather for the first time, so that just jumped way up on high on the list. Okay?
it's not just work, my friend. I mean, I've had a number of people... And I probably would say, you know, myself, that my family is probably my greatest. So, yeah, I mean, it can be work, it can be outside, and you can tell me both.
You know, I'm so proud of my daughters and the young ladies that they've turned into, and my youngest one just have our first grandchild, and my oldest daughter's got our second grandchild coming in August. So that has really been exciting for my wife and I. And work. Doug, I'm gonna be honest. It's when I have somebody that used to work for me come up and say how much they enjoyed working for me and they appreciated what I did for them, then I know I made a difference in them. Or when I see somebody that worked for me that's been promoted into a position of leadership, and you can see them using some of the tools and some of the traits that hopefully I trained them in or I demonstrated to them. I've got a lot of guys that when I had the system engineers that are now branch managers or even directors, you know, and that's really satisfying to me to know I made an impact on them, and now they're impacting other people.
That's fantastic. I've got to let you know, I think, I don't know what number you are in terms of people that I've done this interview with. I think it's 8, but regardless, interesting piece of data is I don't think anybody listed a project, right? They either picked their family or just like what you said, you know, the influence that they've had on others in their career and helping to grow leaders, so to speak. So that's a pretty cool thing. I've been one to say that, you know, there's that natural aspect of leadership. There's the learned aspect of leadership. But the true understanding is that, you know, a lot of it comes from mentoring, from working with good people who demonstrate what it's like to be a leader. You learn more that way than any other way. You know, you don't pick this up in some short course. It's something that comes through experience and some natural ability and then some of that time in the training as well. So I really appreciate your comments. So, David, it's been great talking to you. It's been too long, as you said, when we first got on here. I enjoyed working with your group. It has been good talking to you today. In terms of our listeners, if there's any of them that you know, might be interested in getting in contact with you or learning about the things that you folks do at your base, how might they be able to do that?
Well, if they want to know about ADC, we do have a public website, and it's www.arnold.af.mil, and it has a lot of the information about our facilities and things like that, and Air Force Public Affairs runs that, and they do a really nice job. It's got a lot of cool pictures, and it may even have some videos. They will post those from time to time. If they want to get in touch with me, my email here at work is charles.hurst.1@us.af.mil, and I'll be happy to answer any of their questions if we've had stuff cleared for public release. I've been very fortunate. Larry Davis is my Air Force Deputy Chief, and Larry and I have put together a couple of papers over the last 2 years that were at SMRP and IMC as well. Those are cleared for public release and have a lot of information about ADC and the program that we're doing right now.
All right. It's been great talking to you. And by the way, one of my fond memories that I tell people about was just getting in there the first day. And, you know, I'd gone through the process of going through security and going through all that paperwork. And just as I walked out the door, the reveille was sounded on the intercom system throughout the base. And that was the first time I've ever been somewhere where that was cranked out in the morning, and it raised the hairs right up on my arm and my neck. So I'm proud to have worked with you and your group, and hope to maybe again someday in the future. So thank you, David, and I'd like to thank you all for tuning in to the Leadership Connection today. Until next time, this has been Doug Klucknet. Have a great day.